If you want to support this podcast and get a full ad-free episode, sign up to Headstuff Plus.
Welcome, gather round the fireside and listen to a tale of Fionn Mac Cool, Cool Cullen, Deirdre of the Sorrows, Gronn, your wail. From giants right down to fairies, of both the drooping and solitary, and close to are sometimes scary. Anything goes by the fireside. Yeah. Fireside, the Pooka fireside, the Merrow fireside. Kings and queens fighting heroes, don't you run from the fun, there's no need to hide. Sit by the fireside. Fireside.
Hello, and welcome to Fireside, the Irish storytelling podcast. Each episode of Fireside, we take a story from folklore or mythology, retell it, have a chat about the tale itself and about the craft, culture and history of storytelling. My name is Kevin C. Olhan. I am your host and your Fireside Bard. Welcome to episode 70 of Fireside. There is a grand stretch in the evenings out there, and I am coming to you from, it now seems, my regular home studio in Wicklow. I am not in the beautiful surroundings of the Headstuff Podcast Network studio in Dublin. We are still in isolation here in Ireland and indeed the world, as the world is in the grips of the COVID-19 pandemic. Each episode gets a little bit easier and a little bit harder. It gets a little bit easier to adjust to a new routine and to a new normal. But then it also gets harder, the less and less we seem to know, and the closer it seems to the slow crawl, hopefully back to rebuilding society, as it were. But I'm delighted to still be able to release this podcast, to write, record and release this podcast each and every week. I consider myself very fortunate for that, as I keep saying, that I have the equipment here at home, and that I can, and that Headstuff can keep putting it out until I can make my triumphant return. And we all can make our triumphant returns to work. So I hope you are well, you and your family are well and safe wherever you are, and that this podcast can provide a tiny bit of a respite to whatever it is you have to do each day, whether you are still in work, whether you're at home, working away at your own things, working from home, or even if you're just out of work completely due to the virus, that this can just be a little bit of a break for you. And that is, if you're a returning listener, you're very, very welcome along. If you are a new listener, welcome. Episode 70, what a way to start. If this is your first episode, why don't you go back to the beginning and see what we've been building up to over the last year and a few months. This is, I'd like to just have another quick thanks to all of our patrons as well over on patreon.com/firesidepodcast. If you enjoy this podcast, please do like, subscribe, leave ratings and comments wherever you get your podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever. If you really enjoy it, please do follow me on Instagram at firesidebard, all one word, best place to keep in touch with me, see what's going on with the podcast and with my other work professionally. And if you really do want to support the podcast, you can do so at the Patreon, patreon.com/firesidepodcast. Your contributions, big or small, to the Patreon have never been more appreciated in this time of uncertainty, where so many artists, myself included, have lost a huge amount of work. And indeed, our entire industry is uncertain. But what is certain is that regardless of your contribution, this podcast will continue. I want this podcast only to grow and grow and develop and develop. And speaking of developments, this is the final episode of the Ulster Cycle. And indeed with that is the final episode of the four cycles of Irish mythology. This, when I started doing this podcast all the way back, I recorded the first episode in October of 2018. This was what I set out to do, was to adapt a clear as water version of my own clear tales of the four cycles of Irish mythology that I had waded through dense versions of, sometimes incredible, but sometimes quite tricky, very elaborate versions of these stories. And I wanted to just have a simple, clear as water, as Philpom says in his adaptations of the Grimm fairy tales version, to put out into the world that I felt there was an audience and there was an appetite for, out there. And indeed, there, you've proven me right that all around the world, people do listen to this podcast and that this podcast continues to grow. And that makes me incredibly satisfied, incredibly gratified, and just delighted that that is the case. But after all that, after 30, so with 70, this has meant that we've done 35 folktales and 35 myths, which is insanity. And it's really satisfying to me that we've come to this conclusion at a round number, that this is episode 70. You know, I would have hated if it had been 72 or 68. It's really nice that it's a nice clean 70. But in terms of the future of this podcast, just because I've come to the conclusion of the four cycles of Irish mythology does not in any way mean that this is anywhere near the end of Fireside. This is really only the beginning for us. I have a lot of big plans for the future of this podcast, and I'll go into some of them after the folktales. So that is incentive to stick around. But for now, I'm going to start with the end. Here is the death of Cú Chulainn on Fireside. The death of Cú Chulainn. Over his many years as the Hound of Ulster, Cú Chulainn claimed many, many lives. He left many children without their fathers, and sometimes without their mothers. As such, a lot of young all around Éire grew up wishing death upon Cú Chulainn. And one such victim was a sorcerer named Catalan, who had three sons and three daughters. The six offspring of Catalan swore they would avenge the death of their father and slay Cú Chulainn. But they were so young at the time of their father's death, little was thought of this threat. But the years passed, and the three daughters and the three sons all grew up, and their lust for vengeance never abated. Cú Chulainn would have never slept at all if he worried about every person who swore revenge on him, so he thought little of the children of Catalan. But who did worry was King Concobar MacNasa. Concobar was under no delusion that the reason he had stayed in power for so long was because of Cú Chulainn. Every challenge his nephew had come up against, he had been victorious. He had single-handedly defended Ulster against the armies of Queen Maeve, while all of the Red Branch lay in the pangs of childbirth, a curse caused by Concobar himself. So the Ulster king did all he could to protect Cú Chulainn. When Concobar was informed of the six children of Catalan who were now grown and looking for blood, he could feel this was different. So the king attempted to distract Cú Chulainn the only way he knew how, by throwing a feast. The three sons and three daughters of Catalan marched on Éamon Macha, the court of King Concobar MacNasa. They could hear the sounds of revelry inside. The three daughters had inherited their father's power of enchantment, and they cast a spell to create the sound of warfare, drums, horns, and the cries of men and the clashing of swords. They knew if Cú Chulainn heard the sound of battle, he would come running. But this was the kind of thing Concobar had been anticipating. So he had the musicians play louder, the merriment intensify, and the wine overflow. Cú Chulainn never heard a peep of warfare. For 3 days and three nights, the great session of Éamon Macha continued, with the war noise of the children of Catalan continuing outside. But Concobar knew the session couldn't last forever. Unfortunately, the session can't ever last forever. But the king's druid and counsellor, Cathbad, had a rather ingenious suggestion. There is a valley, Marie, known as Glen na Mór, the Valley of the Deaf. If you take Cú Chulainn there, he will hear no sound of the outside world. And so, the music turned to lullaby, and the dosage of Cú Chulainn's wine was trebled until the Hound of Ulster was in a sound sleep. Once he was out, Cuchulainn's body was carried to the Valley of the Deaf, where the magical warfare sounds of the children of Catalan would never reach him. So the sons and daughters had to regroup and rethink. They quickly had another strategy. One of the daughters transformed herself into the form of Ymir, the wife and love of Cuchulainn. As Ymir, the child of Catalan, walked past the guards of Glanamor, found Cuchulainn and began to weep.
"McGraw-Kell, you must come quickly. There is a war to be fought."
No one would have judged Cuchulainn if his response to this call to action had been, "Not another war." But that wasn't his response. If it had been, he wouldn't have been Cuchulainn. If anything, he was delighted to leave the Valley of the Deaf, that he had no idea how he had arrived at. Cuchulainn ran to the home of his mother, Detchinna, where he had left Liamacha, his loyal stallion whom he had tamed during the challenge to decide the champion's portion. Since he had broken him, Liamacha had never disobeyed Cuchulainn, or shown any less courage in battle. But when Cuchulainn went to tack the horse to a chariot this time, Liamacha bucked and kicked and refused to yield. Cuchulainn then ordered his charioteer Laig to try to calm the horse, but Liamacha shied away from Laig too. On the third attempt, Cuchulainn chastised his steed. "Liamacha, you have not disobeyed me yet, and you will not start today. Calm yourself. Ulster needs us." After these words, the horse obeyed and was latched on to the chariot. Cuchulainn could not see it, but Liamacha began to cry tears of blood. And that was not the only blood, for once Cuchulainn and Laig had mounted their chariot, the Hound of Ulster's mother came out from her home to see her son off and gave him her blessing with a cup of wine. But when Detchinna poured the wine, it turned to blood in the cup before Cuchulainn could drink. Cuchulainn emptied the cup and his mother filled it again. More blood. Detchinna was determined to not send her son into battle without a blessing, so filled the cup one more time. When it turned to blood yet again, Cuchulainn was forced to throw it away and ride out. As Laig and Cuchulainn rode into the site they were told held the battle, they crossed a ford where they saw an old woman washing armour in the waters. Without even being asked, the crone cried out, "I am washing the armour of Cuchulainn, who will be killed today in battle." "We shouldn't let her away with that," said Laig. "She's an old woman," said Cuchulainn. "She has no doubt put up to it by our enemies. They're trying to give us an ominous sense of foreboding." "It's working," said the charioteer. Next, the two Ulster men came across three women sitting round a campfire, cooking something on a spit. They called to the two passers-by. "Care to join us for dinner, boys?" "What are you cooking?" asked Laig. "Dog," said one of the women, and all three howled laughing. Cuchulainn had been named for a dog. He was the Hound of Ulster. So he was under a gyasa to never eat the flesh of a dog. "I am afraid we cannot join you, ladies," said Cuchulainn. "Yeah, eating dog is just nasty," said Laig. The three women then began to jeer Cuchulainn. "Oh, there he goes, lofty and high Cuchulainn, too used to living in the courts of King Cunchobar MacNasa, too good to sit around a fireside with common folk." Cuchulainn was in a bit of a bind. He dare not break his gyasa, but to refuse the offer of hospitality may curse him in battle. And there were three women, so three potential curses. The Hound of Ulster began to weigh up the lesser of the two evils and sat down to eat some dog. The second the gamey flesh of a dog slid down Cuchulainn's throat, he lost all the strength in his left arm. This caused the piece that was on his fork to fall onto his leg. When it did, he lost all strength in his left leg. In the entire left side of his body, Cuchulainn now had the strength of but one mortal man. It was then the three women began to cackle once more and revealed their true identity. They were the Morrigan, all three, Bav, Macha, and Neeman, who had cursed Ulster to feel the pangs of childbirth when King Cuncomar Mac Nasa had forced her to race him in a chariot, and who had offered their hearts to Cú Chulainn during the Thán and had very nearly caused his death when he refused. They had now finally exacted their revenge. They said, "No one escapes the Morrigan." And Bav took the form of the battle crow and flew over Cú Chulainn to foretell his death, and the Morrigan, all three, disappeared. Cú Chulainn wanted to go home, but he could only go forward, into battle, to meet his fate. Laeg and Cú Chulainn's chariot finally arrived at its destination. There on a hill stood the three sons of Catalan, and a fourth man, the great sorcerer Cú Roy Mac Dara, who had been the one to decide the fate of the champion's portion and had sworn to defend Cú Chulainn's honour, had ended up losing his life to him. To tell a short story within the story, Cú Roy and Cú Chulainn were involved in a raid on the island of Fir Falgae. They took their share of loot and abducted the princess of the island. The princess, Blanid, fell in love with Cú Chulainn, but Cú Roy decided he wanted her. Cú Chulainn tried to stop Cú Roy taking her, but Cú Roy drove the hound into the ground up to his armpits and cut off his hair before escaping, taking Blanid with him. But it wasn't long before Cú Chulainn found Cú Roy, liberated the princess, and killed the sorcerer for his treachery. But standing on the hill beside the three sons of Catalan was Louis Mac Cú Roy, the son of the sorcerer who had fell by Cú Chulainn's hand, another fatherless son who had sworn revenge on the Hound of Ulster. Louis Mac Cú Roy had told the sons of Catalan of a prophecy that the first three spears cast by Cú Chulainn in battle would each kill three kings. The sons of Catalan sought to reap the benefits of this and called to the Hound of Ulster to cast the first spear. Cú Chulainn refused. He had been called to battle, not to fight a petty skirmish against four men. So the first son of Catalan stepped forward and told Cú Chulainn if he did not fight, he would be personally satirized. Time and time again, the bravest warriors of mythology live in fear of satire. So Cú Chulainn took a spear and cast it across the plain, and it sailed right through the chest of the first son of Catalan, killing him instantly. But Louis Mac Cú Roy took the same spear and cast it back at Cú Chulainn. It missed the hound, but hit Lia Macha. Cú Chulainn's horse fell to the ground and died. And so fell Lia Macha, king among horses. Cú Chulainn cried for the loss of his loyal steed and wanted to leave there and then. But the second son of Catalan stepped forward and said if Cú Chulainn didn't fight, they would satirize all of Ulster. Cú Chulainn couldn't have that. So he took his second spear and threw it right through the heart of the second son of Catalan. Again, Louis Mac Cú Roy took the spear and threw it right back. This time, the spear struck the stomach of Laeg, Cú Chulainn's beloved charioteer. Laeg had been with the Hound of Ulster through it all. He had offered counsel, aided him in battle, and had never, ever deserted him. And he never did. Cú Chulainn held his friend, and so died Laeg, king among charioteers. The third and final son of Catalan stepped forward and called to Cú Chulainn that if he did not continue to fight, he would satirize his family. But Cú Chulainn didn't need goading this time. He wiped away his tears, took the final spear, aimed it carefully, and pierced right through the heart of the final son of Catalan. Louis Mac Cú Roy did not rush the final shot. Like Cú Chulainn, he aimed carefully, and with all his might, he cast that spear across the plain, and it stabbed Cú Chulainn in the stomach, spilling the hound's entrails all over the ground. Cú Chulainn's hour had finally come. He knew it. but he refused to die on the ground. He wanted to die on his feet like the warrior he was. With the last of his strength, he pulled himself up to the nearest standing stone and dragged his body up it. He tied his intestines around it to keep him standing even after death and gripped his sword tight in his hand. As the light began to fade, Cú Chulainn saw a raven approach him. Surely the Morrigan come to gloat. You got me in the end. But you can never say I didn't put up a fight. The raven tripped over the entrails of Cú Chulainn, which caused the Hound of Ulster to laugh. And Cú Chulainn, the Hound of Ulster, died with a laugh on his breath. For 3 days and three nights, no one dared approach the body of Cú Chulainn. He stood, so he was still a threat. It was only on the fourth day, when the Morrigan grew tired of being further mocked by the Hound of Ulster, even in death, that Bav took the form of the Battle Crow and landed on the dead Cú Chulainn's shoulder. It was only then the world would accept that the Hound of Ulster had died. Louis McCulroy, the man who had done the impossible, the thing literally thousands had attempted. He had killed Cú Chulainn. But not being quite satisfied, Louis wanted his trophy. He wanted Cú Chulainn's sword. So he tried to pull it from the dead man's hand. But even in death, Cú Chulainn's grip was too tight. So Louis took his own sword and sliced the tendons in Cú Chulainn's arm to loosen the grip. It worked, and Cú Chulainn's sword fell, slicing Louis McCulroy's arm off in the process. So Cú Chulainn avenged his own death a full 3 days after he had died. And so ends the Ulster cycle. To be continued. And that is the end of the Ulster cycle and the end of the four cycles of Irish mythology on Fireside. Mythological, Ulster, Fenian, and historical. We've done them all. There may have been a story we missed here or there, but 35 myths along with 35 folktales, 70 episodes. Thank you so much for you listening. There's those of you out there who've listened to every one of them. And there's little I could possibly appreciate. I could never show you my gratitude for how much I appreciate you listening to them. This podcast it's doing episodes like this. It's reaching milestones like this. And I view each episode, when it gets to the high numbers, I view each of them as a milestone in itself. Especially at times like this when everything has been taken away from so many of us. And that this is still a thing that I can do each and every week. This really is the thing that I'm most proud of that I've ever done. I get such satisfaction. It's tough going. It's hard work, this podcast. And there's always more I would like to do. I would love to be able to spend more time than I do on adapting and writing the episodes. But if I did that, I would never get anything else done. I would never write any of the other things that I write or play any music or any of the other things that I do to make my living. But it still takes a huge amount of work, and not just from me, from Jamie, my producer, from Alan and Paddy, who do such valiant, tireless work in Head Stuff, and who are the ones who greenlit this and believed in this project right from the beginning. But it's you, the listeners, who've kept me going each and every week. It's looking at those stats on Audio Boom and seeing this podcast continue to grow little by little. It's still, in the grand scheme of things, a very small podcast, but as I see those numbers build and see how many people have listened overall, that is what keeps me going each and every time. The people supporting the Patreon is incredibly generous, and I'm bowled over by even the few of you that are. And I do hope that that continues to grow, because it does really help, and it is obviously a huge incentive. All we ever want to do is to get paid for the things that we love doing. And I do get paid for things that I love doing when I gig and when I do shows and musicals and plays. And to make even any money off this from the live shows or from the Patreon is incredible. But I do this podcast. I started as a thing I wanted to see myself I wanted to know more about the myths and folktales of Ireland, and I want to continue to do that. These are such broad strokes that I feel I've done with so many of these. And I don't feel we're in any way done with Irish mythology, and we're certainly not done with Irish storytelling. Because I want to talk a little bit about this story before we move on. And I won't be able to do too long because... Yeah, oh no, we're not too bad on time. I adore this story. I absolutely adore this tale. I'm so, so happy that... Because, you know, the last story we did was the death of the kings and queens, which was more of a story, a compilation of different stories that I pieced together. And I'm proud of it. I'm delighted I did that. I'm delighted I tied up all of those loose ends from the cycle. And to be honest, the last story was probably the one that I should have chronologically finished the cycle with, because it's the death of all the characters, a lot of whom who died after Cú Chulainn. But let's not be under any illusion. Queen Maeve is incredible, you know, Conchobar, and our lesser characters like Ferdia, and then as he came, Conall Cearnach came into his own there in the later cycle. But beginning, middle and end, this is Cú Chulainn's cycle. He is the most famous character in all of Irish, in the Irish pantheon, and for good reason. He's such a complex, flawed, superhuman, yet superhuman character in the world, and I love feeling so much closer to him. I'm immensely biased, but I've called Cú Chulainn the Jesus Hercules of Irish mythology. You compare him so much to Hercules because Hercules is so much more a worldwide established character, but I'm biased but I way prefer Cú Chulainn, and that's probably because I know so much more details about him. But I know a lot about Hercules as well. I before doing this podcast, I knew immensely more about Greek mythology than I did about Irish mythology. I'm delighted that finally the scales have tipped a little bit in the other direction. But I'm so glad that after adapting the Tán and countless tales of Cú Chulainn's boyhood deeds, of his childhood, of his training, of the champion's portion, of him lying in his sick bed, the one time of him falling in love, everything, that after all this, his final story was as satisfying and such a fairy tale as this was. This was such a classic story in terms of structure. You have your beginning, middles and ends. You have forebodings. You have the fact that this ties in with everything else, that this is the natural conclusion. This is like the end of The Sopranos or The Wire or something in terms of everything catching up story-wise, that everything catching up to our heroes, you know, we have them having to accept the consequences of the lives that they've led. And in some adaptations, and a lot of people are under the impression that Cú Chulainn died at the end of the Tán, and I could have killed him at the end of the Tán because he sometimes does die at the end of the Tán, and who knows, maybe originally in the original text he did die at the end of the Tán. But once I read this story, I went, no, I want to do the proper story. And with the foreboding as he goes into battle, of the Morrigan finally getting her over, and of the deaths of him, the horse, and Laeg. I love that Laeg was there right to the beginning. Laeg was a real MVP, as far as I was concerned, through all this cycle. He was with Cú Chulainn through everything. And every time I saw Laeg mentioned in a story, I made it an effort that... You know, it says this Cú Chulainn single-handedly fought the Tán, and that is true in terms of fighting, but he wasn't alone. Laeg was always with him, his loyal, devoted charioteer, and I'm delighted he was with him right at the end. I definitely got a bit of a pang of emotion there, coming to the end of that story, as it was the end of the cycle, but like saying goodbye to Cú Chulainn, who we've been with so much for the last few months, and who I really feel has been with me over the last year, because he's been hanging over me in a way, because this is... The Ulster cycle is the second cycle chronologically, but it's really what we were building up to, which is why I left it till last. I wanted to feel like I was a better writer, a better storyteller, that I'd learned how to write, how to record these podcasts, what worked, what didn't work. And every day is a learning curve, and I still think I have so much, so much to learn about writing, about storytelling, and about recording these podcasts. But I can feel myself from that story, the progress I've made. I feel like I am a better writer, and I feel like I'm a better storyteller, and I hope that you feel that as well, and I hope that I can continue to grow, and that we can continue to grow this podcast together. But I couldn't leave it there without giving, of course, a mention to the statue of Cú Chulainn. the famous statue of Cú Chulainn, which stands in the GPO in Dublin, is the statue of Cú Chulainn died standing up, tied to the Standing Rock, with the raven on his shoulder, signifying that he is dead. Spoken before, that is the thing, that is the image that was used as the symbol for the volunteers in the 1916 Rising, to show a sense of Irish pride and romanticised Irish mythology for use in the war effort. And likewise, it was used at the total opposite side by the Unionists. It was used by both Nationalists and then Unionists, who chose to view it as Cú Chulainn defending Ulster against the rest of Ireland, whereas the Nationalists viewed it as Cú Chulainn defending Ireland against everyone else. And both have their validity, and I love that Cú Chulainn has been used by so many people, for good and for bad. You know, like, so many figures have been used for good and for bad, but, I mean, it's generally no good thing when something is used to incite war, even if it is the liberation of a nation, as it was with us here in Ireland. But that shows the power of these stories and the endurance of this story, and why Cú Chulainn is still as famous today as he was, is because he's been used as a symbol and a figurehead by so many people. And I hope that there's those of you out there who, like me, knew this image but didn't really know the association of this image or this specific story about how Cú Chulainn came to die like this, and that it was here and that it wasn't at another time. Because this was not something I knew a huge amount before starting to research it. And I hope that you'd enjoyed it, and I hope that you got something out of it, even half as much as I did. But I will start to wrap things up now. But for those of you who've been very good boys and girls waiting for the end of this podcast, what comes next, you may be wondering? Well, we have, of course, hundreds of more folk tales to talk about. But what are we going to do instead of our myths? Well, I have a good few ideas. Things could change, things could develop, and as always, please do contact me either on Instagram at FiresideBard or on the Patreon, if you are one, to let me know your suggestions or what you would or would not like to see. But I have three big ideas at the moment. I had always spoken about moving on to other cultures, folktales and myths, such as the German folktales, the Greek myths, the Norse mythology, and the any other Indian mythology, so many others that I've done research into over the last years, couple of years. And who knows, maybe down the line that may still be an avenue I can go. But at the same time, this is an Irish storytelling podcast, and I do believe that anything I do, if I do German folktales, it will still be an Irish storytelling version of German folktales, like some of the tales that we've done. We've done Gold Tree and Silver Tree, which was the story of Snow White. We have done Fair Brown and Trembling, which was the story of Cinderella. All of these were Irish versions of these folktales, and there's loads more of an untapped source there with all of that. But I think there's so much more to explore with storytelling from Ireland itself before we go. So my three main ideas at the moment were, next up, I want to do what I'm going to call the Wilde cycle, in that Oscar Wilde published a book of Irish fairy tales that he wrote himself. His mother, Oscar Wilde's mother, was a folklorist who we have, in the early days particularly, done many stories that were collected and adapted by her. Oscar Wilde's most famous stories, no doubt, are The Happy Prince and The Selfish Giant, which are beautiful, beautiful, devastating stories that I want to now do my own adaptations of, as a nod to Oscar, whose work I've always been an immense, immense fan of, and researching them over the last couple of weeks has been the greatest joy, to be reading these beautifully crafted stories. And I hope that I can do justice to them, because they're so well written that why would I touch them? Why would I adapt them? But I am a storyteller, and I don't want to just be a narrator of these stories. I think there are fantastic audiobooks of the stories of Oscar Wilde, but I want to do my own version of them, because I believe that if I was to just narrate them, that would be doing a disservice to the many other writers whose adaptations of these stories I've just taken the essence of and done my own thing. I don't hold Oscar with more of a reverence than I would have for his mother or for Ciarán Carson or Thomas Kinsel, who did the adaptations of The Thorn. So it may work, it may not work, but I think it will work. I've started adapting the first story already. So the wild cycle is something we've something to look forward to. Next, I want to do my own cycle that I've crafted an idea for called the Legend Cycle, which is to touch on more figures from Irish history who have developed into characters of folklore and to explore a little bit of the difference between the historical figures and the characters from folklore. So these include the great Irish king Brian Boru, the story of the Norman invasion of Ireland with Dermot McMurrah, of course the legendary pirate queen Grainne Whale, who was the last character in the Fireside theme song that we have yet to do an episode about. But this will be a new cycle of my own devising, and so will be a lot of fun and a lot of work, because adapting history is obviously a very different kettle of fish. You can't just totally go down the same route. But I think that the fact that the historical cycle, or the king cycle, had so many characters from history but were done in a mythological and storytelling way, I think that it is, there's a huge amount of potential for that, and I think there'd be an appetite for that as well. And finally, one other thing ticking around in my idea, my head at the moment as well, is doing a Blasket cycle. And that is stories from the Blasket Islands in southwest Kerry. It was an island off the southwest coast of Ireland where 150 people, no more, ever lived, but lived there over generations and kept a deep tradition of oral music and storytelling alive there. And seven residents, there were seven Blasket books, as they were published, as they were known as, mostly dictated, mostly by writers who didn't read or write. And they were often dictated to writers, Oscailge. I'm reading one at the moment called 20 Years of Growing by Maurice O'Sullivan. And the Blaskets are an absolute gold mine of folklore and tradition, and they are one of the most important aspects of Irish storytelling. And so I think I'd be doing a disservice to this podcast and to you as listeners if I didn't explore the Blaskets as well. Most famous probably is the storyteller Peg Sayre, who is considered one of the greatest Irish storytellers who ever lived, who was actually on the Leaving Cert syllabus for the Irish language course for many, many years for Irish students. She's not anymore, so I didn't get to do Peg, but the Peg's book has been a great curse, I believe, on a lot of an older generation who had to study it. But I think when you put anything in an academic sense, it can kill the potential joy in it. So I'm sure if I come to Peg's book with my outside academic sense, that I'll find a great joy in it, and hope you will as well. So those are the plans. Let me know if you think any of them are great ideas, if you think they're terrible ideas. I can't promise I still won't do them either way, because I think they will work. But I, as always, would love to hear your feedback. Would love what you would want to hear more of or less of, whatever it is. I hope you can hear how excited I am about the future of this podcast and about what we're going to explore together. So thank you so much for listening. Thank you so much to Alan and Paddy at Headstuff, to Jamie, my producer. I'll see you all, you'll hear me all next time. And remember, wherever you go, you can always join me by the fireside. Thank you and goodbye.
This podcast is part of the Headstuff Podcast Network.
If you want to support this podcast and get a full ad-free episode, sign up to Headstuff Plus.